Welcome to episode 48 of Gallifrey Public Radio. This week, the BBC announced the new Doctor, and we just couldn't wait to sink our teeth into the issue. But first, your hosts. I'm Jay Whitten.
We need somebody who is more intense.
And with me are Melissa Mazza.
I demand to be referred to as Sagacity from now on.
And Keir Hansen.
The jockstrap of Rassilon is formidable and large.
Spoilers.
We will be discussing news and rumors, as well as episodes that have already aired. But if we get into anything too serious, don't worry. We'll warn you again.
Welcome to episode 48 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where our dear Time Lord's clock strikes 12, and the Whovian world loses every last synapse of its collective mind over the sight of a grizzled Scotsman emerging onto a BBC stage.
Squeeze!
So, we have the new Doctor. Oh my God.
Yeah, so
we have a new nerd pope.
Exactly.
So in case you guys aren't aware, if you're trying to avoid the, you know, finding out who the 12th Doctor is, good on you, because that's really hard to do at this point. But this is this is going to be a very spoiler filled episode if that's what you're trying to avoid. So you might just want to go ahead and turn it off and come back next week, because that's what we're talking about tonight. That is about it.
Yeah, so. We couldn't ignore this information. It was everywhere this week. It was trending on Twitter that we have a new 12th Doctor.
Yes.
Well, all right. In the studio this evening, of course, we have Melissa joining us. How are we this evening, Melissa?
I am good. How are you, Keir?
I am extremely well, actually. I've been riding a high ever since Sunday afternoon. This is good. It just keeps getting better as people explode. And Jay, of course, with us.
Yes.
Ubiquitous Jay. How are you, sir?
I'm doing very well. I'm very excited about the announcement of our new Doctor.
Yes, yes. The how do we want to refer to him? The weather-worn Scotsman? The experienced Scotsman? I don't want to say old.
No, because he's really not. Technically, he's only like a few months younger than Hartnell was. Than Hartnell was So he's the second oldest Doctor there is.
Anyway. Yes.
By just a couple of months.
Yeah.
But Peter Capaldi stepped out on the stage, Sunday evening, British Standard Time, or in the middle of the afternoon here in the U.S. After much pomp and circumstance, to a very, very interesting public response. Interesting to me personally, because I think it was kind of the inverse of what I had expected from a lot of the Whovian demographics.
Yeah.
So it's definitely something that we want to talk about tonight. There's a lot that we can tackle on this, because the interwebs are aflame right now with all kinds of kudos and anticipation and butthurt and everything in between about this choice.
Well, I mean, it all started with Twitter. The day of the announcement, Twitter has released some of its numbers, and let me read some of these to you. So the total number of tweets regarding the revelation of the 12th Doctor was 542,000 tweets. During the live show, the number of tweets referring to Doctor Who was about 9,000 per minute, jumping to 22,081 a minute as the new Doctor was revealed.
Okay.
So Twitter instantly exploded. I mean, that was our first indication of how many people were actually paying attention to this.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know I personally made the agreement that I was going to keep this sort of stuff off of Twitter. We sort of kept it on a closed channel for a little while because I didn't want to add to all of the muckety-muck in case people really were trying to avoid this. There's just no way. But they were trying.
Yeah. And I think, like, some of them, I know our friend J-Bob made it about 30, 45 minutes, I think, before he found it. Yeah. And he made a mistake
of logging into Facebook, yeah.
Yeah. Thinking it was safe. It's never safe. Facebook is never safe.
Absolutely not. And not to mention the fact that it was the BBC themselves that were posting huge pictures and massive posts all over the place. BBC, BBC America, all the Whovian fan sites were just throwing it all out there within seconds.
Oh, yeah.
So there was no way that you could set your filters accordingly.
His Wikipedia page was updated within a matter of like 2 minutes.
Yep. Well, given the fact that he was the front runner in the closing of the betting, the national betting standings about over 24 hours prior, there were probably people who had already penned in the edits on Wikipedia and were just waiting to hit submit.
Yeah.
Well, now that you bring that up, what do you think of that? Do you think that he actually got leaked as the, 'cause why was that number one? You know?
Oh yeah, his casting got leaked. A rumor of it anyway, and it was a strong rumor. And oh man.
Yeah.
Somebody forgot to put their phone on silent.
I did.
So, it did get announced, or it did get rumored very strongly. Stephen Moffat. he'd made comment about it that, you know, yes, the rumor came out and somebody was told that he was cast already, and that's where it all started from. And he was like, you know, it's not the secrecy that matters; it's the reaction to the Doctor.
Right.
And it's, you know, as soon as people found out, they were excited instead of like, oh, I didn't want to be told. Yeah.
And that brings up a really interesting point. You know, we were talking about, you know, Jay and I, we had the episode last week where we were talking about the lies of Stephen Moffat, the many, many lies of Stephen Moffat.
Very timely episode.
Mm-hmm. And him talking about the fact, you know, there were, oh, sure, you know, there are older actors being considered and things of that sort, but we're still very early in the process, you know, and he stuck to that, you know, to the last days.
Oh, yeah.
He stuck to it. But I do understand, I think I fully understand why it is that they decided to do this sort of high-profile public announcement at the time that they did, because, and we had sort of theorized about this, the news was eventually going to get out.
Yeah.
As it went from 5 people knowing to 10 people knowing to then there were going to be makeup crews and costume crews that were going to have to start working with him to get him prepared for promo shoots and press junkets and things like that. You know, that circle of knowing was going to expand farther and farther, and eventually it was just going to bust out. So I think they were – BBC One was right to take the reins and say, you know what, if this information is going to fly into people's hands, we'd rather it be a big bang that we're in control of than some sort of slow trickle that becomes a torrent that we have no control over.
Yeah.
And
they did a very good job of it. I mean, it was, you know, they're like, okay, we have a 12th Doctor, and we're going to announce it in just a couple days. You know, and it was very, very quick turnaround.
Yeah.
And I think they did a great job of controlling it and saying, you know, you're going to find out, but it's going to be on our terms. Mm-hmm. And they didn't dick around and waste time doing it. That's the important thing.
Right. Well, I tried to lay out for us, because of all the different points of discussion that people are choosing to focus on online in the forums, on various news channels, G4, and all the various media formats that can discuss this. They're starting to focus on a couple of things in particular. So I figured that we could kind of tackle them, you know, throw our 2 cents in and just kind of take a look at the amount of hubbub that's coming up over each of these, because they do bring up some interesting points. And it's not just the actual nature of the discussions themselves or the content of the discussions. It's the topics that the discussions revolve around that I think are rather interesting for the show here in the 21st century. One of the biggest ones that's coming out right now is obviously from the moment he stepped onto the stage and the limelight caught him, everyone said, oh, he's older.
Yeah.
He's considerably older. He's not one of these 20-something, 30-something cute boys.
Yes, and that makes me very, 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 very happy.
Okay.
Because I think that, you know, you've got to be varied with the Doctor. You know, that's been proven with all of the actors that they've gotten, not to, you know, extends beyond, you know, his gender and race, but hey, you know, that's for a whole different topic. But you know, you've got varying ages, you've got varying, you know, accents and people and all this stuff, and I think that, you know, they've been hitting the, you know, young attractive actors kind of hard. You know, it's like, give us somebody else. You know, I'm glad to see that they kind of went older and have this, you know, I don't know, you know, he seems to carry a lot more weight to him, you know, even though I haven't seen him in the role, but it just seems like he's going to be able to carry more weight than Matt Smith had been able to.
It sort of comes right out of the gate with a bit more gravitas and presence.
Yeah.
He's definitely a very confident actor. If you've seen him in any of his other roles, and we'll get into some of his other roles that he's played. Holy crap. He's got presence. He can devour a scene whole by just unhinging his jaw and then the things that spill out in reverse will make for some interesting doctor dynamics, I'm sure. But some of the people that we've been sort of, you know, pointing to kind of add to this discussion, we're taking that up, and a couple people said, "Oh, okay, they're really throwing back to kind of classic Who. They're getting older white guys, older white men, and you know, they're hitting all those points. Older white men to play this role in the face of an industry where we're trying to really diversify." So that kind of brings around a lot of the things that I wanted to kind of bounce off the two of you, because I know we were sort of theorizing about it when we got the news that Matt was going to be stepping down. And we said, okay, well, you know, are they going to go old or young? Are they going to go, you know, flip the race? Are they going to flip the gender? How are they going to do this? And now, even more so, I think, than when it was up in the air and we didn't know who it was, now that they've chosen who it was, it seems like the discussion's gotten even more intense.
Yeah.
Because now celebrities are chiming in. And it's,
this was getting a lot of attention, even when... with Matt Smith, you know, when the rumors first came out that he was going to be leaving the show, like last year this time or whatever it was, you know, and it was brought up, you know, it's like, oh, well, are we going to get a female doctor? Are we going to get a black doctor? Are we going to get all this stuff? And so it's like, it's all been gaining momentum since then. And it was really like people were hammering on that really hard for the past couple months, or for the past month or however long. Yeah. I think that it's just for it to be such a big topic that people were talking about constantly, for them to go with the, you know, quote unquote safe route and pick the older white guy, it seems like a bit anticlimactic.
Well, and I had this exact discussion with one of our friends, Jeannie. She had brought up the fact that, and she was the first one to say, you know, right out of the box, like as long as they announced, she said, well, I'll wait and see what he's able to produce, but I'm surprised they went safe with the older white guy. And I kind of thought about that for about a whopping 30 seconds and came back and said, you know what? I don't think that necessarily is a safe call, because of the fact that you've got something right now where, with the resurgence of the show and the fact that a huge percentage of the currently active fan base are these net connected, you know, 0 second response, Tumblr driven, tweet driven, teenagers, 20 somethings, 30 somethings, that may only be new viewers. They may have never seen a classic episode in their life. They're accustomed to seeing, I mean, Eccleston was probably the oldest or the least, GQ kind of looking, gent they'd had in the role up to date. And to take a show that, you know, was about being, you know, hip and clever and witty and action and all these things, and then all of a sudden they put a character in there that could be your dad, your angry dad, but your dad, I think is a risky maneuver for their current fan base, or a good chunk of their current fan base. I don't think it's such a safe call at all.
Yeah, and, you know, a lot of people have said stuff like that, like, you know, well, what's this going to do to the fan base? You know, because, what was it? Let me see. Trish wrote in, she said, you know, at the Nerd HQ panel, or Who panel last year, there were a lot of young female fans squeeing over Matt and Arthur. Will they keep watching? You know, if they're drawn more to, you know, the sexy young actors than to the show itself, you know, okay,
they're not watching the same show.
Yeah, so if people are going to get bent out of shape and stop watching because they cast an older actor, and, you know, I'm sorry, that's a lame reason to stop watching the show. Yeah, at least let him get a couple episodes in, see what he can do with the role, and then if you don't like him as the doctor, I can respect that. But if you're just going to be like, oh, no, he's older, I'm done, then, okay, go over to the Supernatural fandom. We don't need you here.
Yeah.
I have to say, though, people probably get hooked on the young hip doctor, and then they just won't be able to help themselves and will watch the older, you know? But I mean, and personally, going back to what Kier was saying, I'm very glad that they didn't go with a woman. I know I said a lot, but like, yes, a man is this, like, the safer choice, but I don't think that we're actually ready for something like that. The other race, like that, you know, that's nothing, you know, but, I'm glad that they chose a man. And, we have this this article Stephen Moffat was talking about it, and I like what he says here, that the strange old young Matt Smith will turn into the strange young old Peter Capaldi. So it's at least the way Moffat is seeing it, it's natural. It's a natural progression that he's this age now. Like, and obviously that means like they're going to really play on that, how the weight of the world is on his shoulders. Sure. Personally, I'm excited to see it, but like, I don't think Trish or whoever wrote in has anything to worry about. Like, I think people will be so hooked on the show that they just have to watch it. Plus, we'll probably get some hot guys here and there. Like, freaking Rory wasn't like a main character. Well, he wasn't the doctor. If that's who the girls are squeeing over.
And you know, it may not be. It may be one of those things where they realize, and we'll get to this too, is the dynamic with the current companion. You know, how an older doctor is going to be able to do against Clara. Or with Clara. I shouldn't say against Clara. That's saying that they're immediately going to be at odds. And we don't really know what their dynamic is going to be, either between the actors or the way they're going to write their interaction. You know, whether they want them to be abrasive to one another or whether they want them to fall into a fatherly, daughterly kind of relationship because Clara doesn't have her parents anymore or what have you. Or the residual knowledge of everything that she's done to save 11th. You know, and we want to know now how much of that memory she retains and the fact that that's going to change their relationship regardless of who it is that she's talking to across the console. There's all kinds of unknowns we're going to be facing, and I'm fascinated to see what they're going to do with it. But we have another one of our listeners, Dawn, who works in a media center library with a bunch of teenage kids. And she even has a little clique of Whovian kids that come in and check in with her all the time, and they discuss things across the counter with her. And nice. She said immediately now she's already seeing 13-year-olds come up, and they're excited about it. 13-year-olds.
Yeah. I know. I showed my 11-year-old who's becoming a diehard Whovian very quickly. You know, I was like, no, this is the 12th Doctor. He's like, well, that's going to be interesting, seeing how he plays with Clara and how he takes the role. And I'm like, this, from an 11-year-old. Who's gaining, you know, who's looking at this? Yeah, you know, he's looking at it and saying, well, this will impact the show in a very interesting way. I can't wait to see how it plays out.
Yeah. He's very
That's
intelligent.
Extremely astute of you. I'm going to go buy you some chocolate now. Yes. Thank you, smart child.
Yeah, but then it's funny, you know, on the flip side of it, we've got folks that are a little perturbed at the fact that they, you know, they feel like they're going back into a bit of a throwback. Whether you want to call it safe or not, but that they feel they're not pushing the envelope enough and that it's time to really kind of shake things up. Well, there's that race card again.
Yeah.
You know, we had found out as a result of some Tumblr posts that Neil Gaiman had been doing over the last couple of days, he had been fielding all kinds of backlash and Q&A about his thoughts on the potential casting of a female doctor, where he sees it as, and he even... Man, he caused a complete poop storm over this. In the course of one posting, he said things like, you know, if I was showrunner, which people went, boah, thinking he was going to take it over from the, you know, and then he said things like, you know, I know it's not going to happen under Stephen's control because he just feels the time is not right. I personally feel the time is not right now. But it is definitely due or nigh, you know, it's got to happen. And, you know, maybe if I were running things in a, you know, down the road, I would want to see that happen. I would want to see that come into being, but it's just not that moment.
Right.
But the other thing that he brought up was the fact that, you know, people started bringing up the whole race decision because, you know, Idris Elba's name had been bandied about for a little while. And he somehow, I don't know whether he sort of backed into admitting this, but he mentioned that there was another actor who had actually come around and gone through the dance once back when they were interviewing to replace David Tennant, and that Peterson Joseph had been on the short list. And he apparently, and taking this, you know, hearsay through Neil Gaiman, turned the role down. So maybe there was that opportunity once before, and it just... circumstantially just didn't come to pass. But I don't know. It just leads me to think that with all these things, I honestly do think that in the grand scheme of things, that Moffat is looking at this as, I want the best talent for the role at where the show is in the story that that I have in my head right now.
Yeah.
But I also heard that Peter Capaldi had been tapped to be 11th Doctor and something went wrong. So it's possible that he always was in the back of their mind as the next dude. Well,
according to Stephen Moffat, what he's saying, and you know, rule number one, take it for what it is. He was saying that he had thought about Peter Capaldi when they were casting Eleven, but he said that timing wasn't right for him at that point. Mm-hmm. So it was. He said that he's always been in the back of his mind, but it wasn't until now that he felt he could bring him in and really have him play the Doctor.
Yeah, and think how much different the storyline is right now from where it was three seasons ago.
Yeah,
in terms of what the Doctor's experienced, where he is within his mindset, the centuries now that have passed within his personal timeline, he's one regeneration closer to that ticking clock. We've got this whole hullabaloo now as a result of the finale with the introduction of the Un-Doctor, which, and we'll get to this before we wrap up tonight. There's some interesting little bit of news that, put this in double spoiler underline here, that we have a clear understanding now of where John Hurt's Doctor fits into the whole grand scheme. Clearer, I should say. But now you've got a role that somebody needs to step into that is not nearly the same role that David Tennant was vacating. So, if Capaldi did do a screen test once, and I believe it was just a matter of, he came in once and kind of read for it really quickly, and they said, okay, well, and by saying timing wasn't right, I don't think that was he was referring to scheduling conflicts or something like that. I think he was literally referring to the time within the show was just not the right time for an actor of that nature. Mm-hmm. So, but then when the name came back up again, brought him in, had him read once, and the decision was made in very short order. So I guess that tells me that Moffat is at a point with what he wants to do with the show that is well suited to what Capaldi is going to be bringing to the table. So what does that mean? Are we going to be seeing something that goes dark, goes really off the rails? Remember what they were saying when they were preparing us for all these announcements and the 50th and the Christmas special things? They were saying it was going to change the nature of the show. The show is going to be forever altered. Well,
right.
This could be the path. Now, there's something I want to bounce off of the two of you. And this is something that really I'm interested to get from the two of you, because I don't really know how much that you know already about Capaldi or any of his body of work. And that's the discussion, and it's another big point that's coming up publicly, is the idea of the known versus the unknown talent for the casting. He is. I don't really know. I'll have to check in with some folks that are over in the UK about how much of a really right off the front page of the Sun or something that his face is recognizable from his body of work. But the internets suddenly became all experts on him,
right.
And the only thing that they had to do was they had to share a bunch of clips of a lot of his roles that had him cursing like a sailor. I mean,
It's not hard to find those clips, though.
Oh,
I've seen amazing. A lot of pictures on Tumblr, like a caption of it, him saying it's like a Dalek or something. Just the worst, most foul-mouthed things.
It's astounding. So go ahead. Here in the States, sorry, Canada, you go out on Netflix Instant and grab the movie In the Loop. Okay, it was a sort of a mock. It wasn't a documentary, but it was sort of a political, satirical thing, similar to the Coen Brothers' "Burn After Reading" or something like that. And all takes place, and he plays this this cabinet minister who literally, like every third word out of his face hole, is either an F-bomb or referring to female genitalia in the worst possible connotation, like to the point where it's punctuation marks. It's like he does that to take a breath. And within the first 5 minutes of the film, we just sat there agog. And how often do I get to be agog? But and I was, I'm thinking to myself, my God, this is going to be the Doctor. How are what? But then I thought, okay, all right. And this is why I wanted to bounce off the two of you, the idea of known versus unknown talent. And then within that, the fact that his body of work does include stuff within the Hooniverse. So, okay.
Did you ever see Wishbone when you were little, where there's a dog that acted out like classic literature?
Oh, yeah. Oh.
Okay, so one of the things that I remember about that show, bear with me here, is that they had like a very small actor pool to work with, and it was always the same people playing the same roles in different storylines or whatever. I've been thinking about that a lot with Doctor Who lately, that they just have like this core group of actors. And I mean, honestly, all of England is kind of like this. Like, there's just a few people that work. And
the BBC only has 12 actors.
Right. So, you know, they get reused. They get recycled. You can see the Sixth Doctor in the background of Fifth Doctor episodes. Like, you know, it's been done before. But yeah, actually, when I saw his picture, thank you, Jay, for sending that. It was like, you know, a picture of Peter Capaldi. My first thought was Torchwood. Like, that's what I recognized him from. So I'm going to assume if me, like, you know, Joe Schmo in America recognized him from Torchwood, the people overseas probably, like, are more familiar with that show. Like, at least that would have set off something for them as far as recognizability and stuff.
Well, but is there anything saying – it's definitely not the first time that we've had actors, you know, occupy different roles. You know, Freeman – you know, we've got Eve Miles, and whether they choose to actually address it within the script and come up with some sort of a timey-wimey explanation, or just don't explain it at all.
Have they ever not explained it?
They didn't when Colin Baker did it. He was in an episode of with the Fifth Doctor, and then proceeded to become the Sixth Doctor. So, and they never tried to explain it. It was just like, hey, here's our next Doctor.
Yeah.
So.
So I think it's just a matter of, yeah, maybe the gene pool is a little shallow. I don't know what you want to call it, but no, I mean, it's just a matter of Frobisher and Torchwood. Maybe that's a little bit more of a stretch. The father in the Pompeii episode might be something that's a little bit closer to home, but then you can just say, oh, it was some sort of a subconscious imprinting because he was a character that had a particular impact on the doctor's mind, in the fact that he was, you know, dealing with this family crisis sort of thing, and you know, whatever they wanted to do with it, or just leave it alone. And yeah. I would rather they did. But
I have seen a lot of like internet theories though that like somehow, you know, him seeing that face is like indelibly marked upon him, and when he regenerates, it's like a combination of different faces that have meant something to him. Like, people have come up with a lot of things, but in the end, I agree. I hope that they don't even address it.
It's because they don't have enough to do for the next couple of months.
It's true.
Well, but go back to some of his, the idea of him potentially being typecast by some of his other more recent work, and the idea that he's treated as a very, or that he's been playing a lot of very caustic roles, very kind of, not necessarily villainous, but just really abrasive and rather unlikable, you might want to say. And is there any concern that the fact that since a UK viewer, as opposed to, you know, somebody watching from the middle of the, you know, the Midwest here in the States that has never seen anything he's ever been in before, does it really matter?
I don't know. I mean, I think at this point, it's, you know, just within the past 3 or 4 days, he's become a household name, and it would be hard to gauge whether or not people had heard of him beforehand, just because it seems like everybody has heard his name now. Even non-Whovians that I work with, I said something about Peter Capaldi, and they're like, yeah, he's been in the news a lot lately. What's up with him? It's like,
okay. Well, I mean, in all fairness, you know, Chris Eccleston had a body of work, rather extensive body of work prior to playing the Doctor. Tennant had his body of work prior to playing the Doctor. Matt Smith, maybe not so much. But I think, and this kind of, this is how I'm putting this all to rest, and this is how I'm able to kind of sleep at night after, you know, spinning myself around all of these topics every day since Sunday, is that I think there is a reason why the casting decisions that are made are suited to where the show needs to go for the next unforeseeable span of time. You know, they don't know if that's going to be a season or longer, but at least within that one season window that they have in front of them, they meaning Moffat and his, you know, inner sanctum, have to look at what's going to suit the rather fluid storyline or plot development that they want to see carried out, or what the show itself, what the entity really needed at the time. Eccleston was being brought in as a recognizable actor, and he truly was, at a time when they needed a little bit of star power to help the show get back on its feet after years of absence, with a strong classic fan base, but no idea of where it was going to be able to go or grow or survive at the time. So they filled it with, you know, prettier faces and pop stars, you know, Billy Piper and so forth. And that's what it needed at the time.
But it was more than just a matter of filling it with, you know, kind of pretty faces and great smiles and things. They had weight to them, and they built the show. And, you know, like Gaiman said, you know, within four or five or six episodes, there's no question in your mind anymore. That is the Doctor. It always has been. I couldn't have thought anything differently. I don't understand how I could have thought any way else. They bring Tennant in, and they're like, well, this guy, all he is just a smile and a big mop of hair, and he's just kind of clever and aloof, and look at him, and he's just – but you give him three, four episodes, and smack, he's a Doctor. He was needed at the time because they were going to be doing some things that required some classic acting chops. They were going to bend and flex that man and make him do all kinds of things with the role that they had not yet experimented with Eccleston. I don't think. They probably could have, you know, if he had chosen to stay longer. Maybe they would have given it the shot, but we don't know. Smith, I'm sure there was a real reason for that too. Maybe they were really scooping for a demographic that they felt they might have missed, or that they saw growing. You know, that younger fan base that was really starting to come on, and New Who was really catching a huge wave, and they didn't want to take any chances really mixing things up too much. So they wanted to go with someone who was just going to be really likable. This is just a nice young bloke that you want to be able to just have a laugh with and watch him have some adventures. And he proved to be, at least within the last season and a half, really capable. I mean, we talked about this. We saw some stuff out of him over this last series where maybe the scripts weren't, you know, all solid gold, but some of his performances were really exceptional.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you call him, like, such a likable guy and stuff, but he was definitely really good at showing the dark side of the Doctor.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And I think that's what led them to believe that they said, okay, well, you know, if Matt wants out, some of the things that we were seeing, some of the best stuff we were seeing from him lately was him kind of going dark or grappling with some of the deeper undertones that have to go with this millennia-old wanderer and scientist. Maybe that's what we want to emphasize for a little while. Maybe we're at a point... And this is just my theory, and go ahead, Kira at Gallifrey Public Radio, go ahead and write all the things you want, because really I have nothing else to do at 11 o'clock p.m. than to read emails, is to say, you know what, we're at a point now where we think the show is stable enough and the fan base is ready and will ride with us, even if we rattle their cages a bit, and we're prepared to do that, and we're going to throw them some stuff that sucks. I don't mean in a bad, like, you know, poorly written or anything, but stuff that's going to make people angry, you know, material that's really going to shake people up. But we think they're ready for it. So I'm going to get an actor in here. The royal we, are going to put a gentleman in that role who's going to exemplify the kind of time weariness, but yet he still has this spark of life because of all of his experiences. His experiences have both worn him down and made him strong at the core at the same time. You know, weather worn, but heart tough. I'm sure there's a better way to express that. And maybe that's what Capaldi can do. Maybe that's what Stimo sees in him, that he says, and he believes that the audience is ready to take that ride. Mm-hmm. I hope.
No, I completely agree. I mean, I think that, you know, trying to bring him in when Matt Smith took over, you know, instead of Matt Smith, you know, look at what they did with Matt Smith. Look at the story that was kind of told with him about how it was all about family with him, mm-hmm. and he was able to become a part of the family. He was, you know, a part of Amy and Rory's family. Whereas if you brought in an actor like Peter Capaldi, he would automatically fall into like the father figure type of role. Right. And so it wouldn't have been able to be the same dynamic. And I think now that we've established that, now that he's had his family, now that he's lost them, now that he's been through all of that, we're able to go and look at something different. And, you know, Yeah, he might go darker again. He might be just more cold and further removed. But yeah, I don't know. There's all kinds of things that we can do, and it feels like that. You know, it feels right that we've got somebody older and more experienced, and, you know, just ready to take on more and not be, you know, just a member of the crew, but somebody that is going to be able to command respect and take charge without having to prove himself first.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, you were mentioning the fact that Smith had really taken on that family theme in terms of what he established with Amy and Rory, sort of taking on that a sort of a protector, or now we're at a point where there's sort of a brother-sister kind of relationship with Clara. But then there's River as well. And we don't know if her book is closed. Mm-hmm. So what do you think this has to do? I'm going to treat these in reverse order. I kind of wanted to discuss the Clara thing too, but now I'm really kind of spinning on this. What if they do want to bring Alex Kingston back for a short reprise, you know, just a brief interlude with River? What do you think that's going to do with the fact that she was always commenting on the fact that she, you know, such a young face? You know, she always commented on the fact that when she kept stumbling into the doctor in these odd time frames that you know, she looked so much younger than a lot of the times that she had seen him in her reverse chronology.
Uh-huh. I think I only remember her saying that, though, when it was 10. Mm-hmm. I remember them saying that River has seen all the regenerations of the doctor. I don't remember exactly where I heard that. I don't know if that meant future as well.
Well, that was River herself that said that. So there's no context to really tell.
Gotcha.
But I mean, I think that it could be very interesting to see her come back and be opposite, the 12th Doctor. You know, I think it would be interesting to see them not get along and, you know, or possibly, you know, if they're doing the reverse thing again, like, you know, have River head over heels for the doctor and him, you know, can't stand her or vice versa. And then they slowly like make the other one fall in love with them over the, you know, just kind of redo the romance instead of just like, oh, well, I grew up hearing stories about you, so obviously I was in love with you my whole life. You know, actually do something with the romance, you know, and kind of show it develop between the both of them instead of just accepting, oh, well, yeah, they're in love with each other, even though it doesn't really seem like it between these two actors until the, you know, series finale.
Right. Well, yeah. So you've got a whole nother thing to consider now. You know, we didn't know whether or not they were going to be able to reprise River's role simply because of the way that they left her exit, you know, her getting her goodbye. Mm-hmm. You know, we thought, well, that could be the end of it right there. But this now throws another layer onto that, saying that if they did choose to, now we've got a whole new sort of response and a rebuilding of that relationship, or maybe just a, as you said, you know, kind of a immediate acceptance. Well, it's just, you know, I understand. Wibbly wobbly, tell me why me. Yeah, you say I love you, so I must love you. You know, let's just move forward. Oh, yeah. We're married? Okay, great. We're married. You know, and roll with that. You could do quite a bit with that. You could build a great arc around that. But it goes back to whether or not we think it's worth seeing anything more from her role now that we've gotten sort of the, you know, the alpha and the omega of her timeline.
If they do bring her back, I seriously hope that it's just that they give it time. Let Peter Capaldi come in, let him play the doctor for a little while and establish himself as the character before you bring her back in. Let us get used to the doctor before we have to deal with the doctor and River.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because we're going to have to, at least right off the bat, deal with a regeneration with a carryover companion, which we haven't had in a while. So, you know, so since Rose, we have not had the opportunity to be able to see a regeneration with a companion witness.
Right.
And now we've got to see how Clara is going to deal with that. So, hypotheses?
I'm just looking forward to it. I want to see, because honestly, I'm still not 100% on board. I mean, obviously, like, I have to be, I have no choice, but with Jenna Coleman as the companion, like, I really enjoyed her performance this past series, but I'm not sure. I still don't have an opinion yet. So, like, this is critical for my opinion of her, like, how she handles as an actress and, you know, just what her role becomes in these next few episodes. I'm really interested to see because, honestly, like, she's not a strong enough character like Rose to kind of carry the series through to the next season on her own. You know, like, with Rose, we had that as our constant. We could, like, with Clara, I'm not... I mean, not to disparage her, but I don't think people have the same connection that they do, that we did to Rose.
That's true. Well, it's a good point. You know, we've only sort of seen one note from her up to this point. You know, you see her acting against a single actor, or working against, you know, or working with one individual, and you sort of, they fall into a pattern, and you kind of get that one tone back from them with very little variance, and maybe that's just her youth. Maybe it's just the fact that, you know, she's sort of a little inexperienced, or maybe it's just because of the fact that they've been writing her a little safer because they don't know. Similarly to what they did with Smith, they didn't know what he was capable of stretching towards. And it wasn't until he was a good season, season and a half in, they really started to allow him to go into some interesting territory. Maybe this is what she needs.
Yeah. And I mean, you got to think, with everything that we just went through with her, finding out where she comes from, finding out how she's the impossible girl, you know, seeing all these different things, there's all kinds of room for growth. And now you're going to throw her in with the new doctor. You know, I don't know. I think that she could become a very, very powerful character if they do it right. Yeah. And also, I think that with Peter Capaldi, if you've seen any of his other work, if you're familiar with the with his range of acting and stuff, I mean, it's very easy to see all the sass that he's going to, or all the, you know, he's not going to put up with Clara's sass or anything like that. He's going to have a serious problem with her and put her in her place a lot of times. And I think it could make for a very interesting dynamic between the two of them.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that was one of the things that was coming up with a lot of discussions. I know, you know, we were talking about the fact that, the doctor has always been, at least in most of the traditional roles, his companion has been his grounding element, the thing that kept him tethered to either to his sanity or to his patience or to his love for humanity or protection of any species and that sort of thing, that benefactor or protector role. And obviously when the companion wasn't there, you know, that's when we got to see the doctor fly off the handle in various fashions, whether he went dark or just went rogue or just went slightly, you know, left of center or whatever. If we've got an opportunity here to take a companion that, you know, we don't know how long Coleman's going to stay in there or whether she's going to be alone. And that's an interesting point about whether or not they feel that they're going to have to give, they're going to have to introduce somebody closer to Clara's age bracket so that she can have the kind of, you know, youthful chitter chatter that's going to keep the younger audiences engaged, or whether they're going to, as Jenny had mentioned from the one of the many, I don't know if he's telling the truth, Moffat interviews, where he said, you know, we had Matt Smith, a young face playing an old soul. Now we've got an opportunity to see Capaldi, an older face playing a youthful soul. Are they really going to do that? I mean, are they going to make him, you know, straight up, you know, Patrick Troughton goofy, where he's just like this lovable, crazy uncle, you know, running around with a recorder and a big fur coat or something? If you're gonna take some risks, hell, there's a lot of elbow room to do that.
Yeah,
but
I mean, it's all gonna come down to those first few episodes that we get, you know, the first few episodes of Series 8, because we're not going to see much in the way of what kind of doctor he's going to be in the Christmas episode. It's going to be, you know, saying goodbye to Matt Smith and then, you know, the reveal of him as the doctor, and then that's going to be it. So we're going to have to wait until, you know, March or April or whenever the heck it is to really see what he's going to do with this role.
Yeah, yeah. One of our kind of listener contributions that gives us an excellent segue into the next section, because talking about the idea of the roles and where the storyline is headed, Reg had an opportunity to write into us, and she, like you, Melissa, she kind of caught on with the reboot and said, you know, as someone who only discovered, you know, the Whoniverse back in 2005, she's really only known, you know, 9, 10, 11. She liked 9. She adored 10. You know, 10 is her doctor.
Go figure.
But she was lukewarm towards 11 until this past series. Interesting to note. I'm going to pick her brain on that one. She said, I think the interaction with 11th and Clara was interesting, by the interesting choice of words there, and she's curious to see what happens with her storyline. Her storyline. And it was telling to me that she chose to say that she's interested to see where Clara's storyline goes rather than the two of them together. I think that's a little bit telling. Maybe that was a Freudian slip. I don't know. That being said, I'm very happy to see the 12th Doctor is older. He's got that distinguished, sophisticated, potentially sexy kind of vibe that the show needs. Interesting to see I'm stepping out of the quote here. Interesting to see that she kind of calls him sophisticated, potentially sexy for someone who's obviously in his 50s and, you know, and kind of appeals to a more of a kind of a Sean Connery, you know, a little.
If
more
I might
weather.
Interject, it's because he's Scottish. They're always
that is her next sentence. Her absolute next sentence. Killer accent as well. Now, if you've seen any of his other material or when you listen to his interviews and things, his Scottish accent, while a little bit subdued, he's no Billy Connolly, you know, he's no Brian Cox, he's not out there, you know, really rolling the brogue or anything, but it's there.
Yeah, but he's from Glasgow. He must really, like, naturally have that and suppress it.
Yeah, or years of slightly being worn down as a result of having to interact and play other roles. Right. So the question, one of my questions for you, just for poops and giggles, is he going to keep the accent or is he going to drop it?
I'm guessing drop it. If David Tennant had to drop his, like they did with Nine, they made so many jokes about him being from the North. Like he had such a regional accent. I'm not sure if they would do that again.
Straight up Manchester accent. Straight up. Fantastic.
Yeah. Well, and according to David Tennant, they had asked him to subdue the accent because you did just have Chris Eccleston with his accent, and they're like, we don't want, you know, to follow up that kind of accent with another strong accent. It, you know, can you tone it down? So now that we've had David Tennant toned down, and then, you know, Matt Smith, who doesn't really have a, you know, he's got a, what, Londoner accent-ish?
Yeah.
You know, just very,
it's central.
Yep. Very generic, yeah. So it wouldn't be too hard to deal with a Scottish accent now, and I think it would actually be kind of nice to have that difference.
Sure. And there's nothing saying that it has to be, you know, the Doctor takes these things on and it's completely, you know, there's no rhyme or reason to it as far as the storyline goes. They don't say, oh, well, he's got a very erudite accent because he's upper crusty in this regeneration. That's completely bogus. It's the same individual. But I understand, and this is the kind of the thing that I think keeps it up in the air, that decision in the transition from Eccleston to Tennant was Davies's decision. Specifically. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
And we know that Davies and Moffat run very different ships.
Yeah.
So, and Moffat has an accent a mile wide. I love listening to the guy talk. You know, and he's constantly bringing people on board that have accents that run the gamut. You know, you've got Jenny, who's, you know, straight up, you know, Yorkshire lower class. We've got Vostra, who's a little bit, yeah, I guess I'm running through the Paternoster gang, but that's fine. It's just because there's been so much kerfuffle right now about wanting a spinoff series for the three of them. It's just been ridiculous. But no, I think you should keep it. I think it's awesome. You know, we've had within our the group that we've been talking with, you know, Julie and Shooter and Soleil, they're all, why not keep it? Because it's interesting, it's fresh, and it adds an element to a character, a role that we're acclimating to, that gives us something we can say, oh, that's entertaining, it's interesting, because it's fresh and it's different.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Even, but more importantly, like you said, it doesn't matter to the story. Like, there's no rule that says he has to have an English accent.
Yeah. Exactly. But I love the fact – it's something we're running in the back of my head. I'm hearing Rory saying, you know, you are so Scottish. Just, the statements that he was throwing to the back of Amy's head for the last three seasons just kills me. But yeah, so, well, there is a ton to be determined here. We don't even know what – you know, now the things are going to come out where we're going to say, okay, how are they going to dress him? Are they going to change the screwdriver? Are they going to stop using the screwdriver so much? Are they going to start bringing back some elements of some of the classic doctors that they use because of the fact that he resembles the classic? Are they bringing back the umbrella? I mean, for crying out loud, they're talking about everything. And the photoshopped pictures of his head on a million different doctor outfits? Please, folks, don't take anything with the tiniest grain of salt right now. Because I mean, it just the things, everything from the, and this is the first one that we saw. It came out like within seconds, and I don't even know how truthful this was. He was in like this Mr. Rogers cardigan sweater with a sort of a knockoff Tom Baker scarf on, and he's holding the screwdriver all backwards and everything, and he's got, you know, I'm like, I don't know what to believe right now, so I choose to believe nothing.
Exactly.
Nothing.
And I mean, it's going to be the first full episode with him as the Doctor before we probably even see the costume. You know, because you look at, you know, Matt Smith taking over. It was at the end of the 11th Hour that he got his new costume with, you know, with David Tennant. It was at the end of his first episode, the Christmas special, that he comes out in the suit. So yeah. It's we're not going to see it in the Christmas special. You know, it's going to be his first episode that we get the so there's plenty of time to speculate and discuss and, you know, get all butthurt over something that somebody said that's not even true.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it'd be very cool if they wanted to keep him in that slick black shiny suit that he's been making all of his press appearances in, because it looks kind of dashing and all, but it's really kind of hard to have too many adventures in a suit that's that slick.
Yeah,
you know.
I think we need to revisit the Colin Baker outfit. I think that needs some more time on screen.
with LED lights.
Yes. And the little belt buckle that has the scrolling text, definitely.
Yes, yes. So you really know what he's thinking. It's actually attached to the Matrix, so it actually shares little Time Lord secrets. And if you watch the episode really carefully from start to finish, there's a secret message that goes across his belt buckle. It'd be like Fringe. Amazing.
I can get on board with this.
I knew that you could. Oh. So, man. Yeah, just I'm glad to see that it has sparked so much discussion. I'm glad the BBC decided to handle it the way they did. You know, the timing being what it is, you know, do they feel this is kind of early and that they're going to end up with another lull where they're going to have to do something major in about a month and a half to kind of bump interest again before we finally get around to the 50th? I don't know. I got a feeling that they've got lots of opportunities now to have a little interview here and there. A little teaser trailer here and there, a couple of publicity photos, and every single one, if it's staged properly, which who knows better than the liar himself, how to stage something that makes people ask questions, that they'll keep interest extremely high. I mean, for everyone, reactions run the gamut right now from everyone from, you know, we mentioned Dawn earlier, and she was saying, you know, within her library kids, but they were all reacting very positively to it, at least initially. She looked at it, she heard the news, and within a minute or two, she said, all right, I've seen his face, I'm done. I'm not going to read anymore, I'm not going to speculate anymore. She's just going to sit back and she's going to wait for his story to be told, which is an admirable approach.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
If you can do that, if you can separate yourself from a lot of the supposition, which is probably not as hard to do than just the news itself. If you want to stay away from theory, that's a little easier to do because people aren't going to cram anything more than 140 characters a time at you, or a headline on a news article that you can just choose not to read.
Yeah, yeah. The three of us might have a little bit of hard time with that. We're not exactly known for holding back and not discussing every aspect we can come across.
Yeah, so. I was about to say, oh, we're going to do that, and then I couldn't say that.
Yeah, no, we're not.
But I do, you know, in terms of some of the things that that some of our listeners have come back with that were interesting to know, you know, circle back to what we were saying about the recognizability of the actor and whether or not he's a sort of an established talent or whether there's a body of work that has to be overcome or that needs to be shed in order to fall into the doctor's role or redefine the doctor's role. We had a really good rapport going for a while on a group discussion, Jay. I know you were a part of it, too. It was going back and forth between some friends of ours. Shooter was taking the line that the idea of the relative unknown keeps with the Doctor's casting so far. He said relative unknown because right, now you're dealing with a global entity. So, you know, 2005, if you were to ask, you know, somebody in Manhattan or in L.A. or somebody who Christopher Eccleston was, they might not be able to rattle off a single thing that he had appeared in at the time, or Tennant, for that matter, in 2006. So with the relative unknown keeping with the Doctor's casting so far, he had hoped that the role had a bit more gravitas, you know, and recognizability to attract a bigger name in the present day. You know, he was hoping for somebody like a, you know, whether it be, you know, the Helen Mirren, if you wanted to go the female route or something like that, you know, the Benedict Cumberbatch or something like that. Especially with the idea of pulling it together in this big live special announcement event and so forth, that it was going to be, you know, the curtain drops and out runs Shatner, you know, or something like
Jesus.
That. I'm getting in the tires now.
Go away. No, that's it. You're done. That statement is enough. You're done.
I was just reading between the lines there, but Shooter did go on to say he will, of course, reserve judgment until we actually see Mr. Capaldi in action as the Doctor. He did note that he liked his character in the Pompeii episode, considered that an awesome episode. Mm-hmm. But he was also one that was a very strong opponent of really wanting to see a female Doctor. He really thought that was going to happen this time around. And now, and he had this really other interesting theory. Maybe this is something we can play around with later on. I had never even really considered this before, but the idea of an actor who had played a companion before coming back as a future Doctor. My brain is still working on that one, but
I don't know.
Because he really wants to see an Amy Doctor, like something awful.
That would be obnoxious,
but not Amy as Doctor. This would be just Karen as Doctor kind of thing. However you chose to explain that.
Yeah.
Soleil jumped back in. Jay, do you want to share what this Soleil's side of this?
Yeah. So Soleil was saying that he understands what he's saying, but part of what makes the Doctor so special, the casting of the Doctor, is that you take these people who are relatively unknown and give them, such a huge role. I mean, this is like you said, it's a global phenomenon. People pay attention to this. And like I said earlier, Peter Capaldi is now a household name 3 days after the fact that he was announced. He hadn't even starred in the show yet. It's just revealed that he's going to be in it. And so you've got these people that go on this wild ride, going from obscurity to the front pages of newspapers. You put someone in that role with weight behind them and they'll just be playing another role. Sure, they may do it well, but at the end of the day, it's just another role for them. And when you look across the doctors or the actors who have played the Doctor so far, they have been so incredibly thankful for the opportunity that they've gotten to play this role that they have given everything and beyond. And it lends so much more depth and life to the role when these people, realize how important a thing it is instead of just it's another awesome job.
Okay, well, that absolutely valid. The idea and this kind of that goes along in very good lockstep with what Gaiman was saying about the fact that I just want to see a blurry face in a photo and say, oh, really, him or her or it, and really not really know too much about it, and then a couple episodes in say, yeah, no, I'm sorry, I should have never doubted it. This absolutely works. That's the Doctor. I should have known all along.
I'm not even at that point. Like, I saw as soon as they announced Peter Capaldi, I'm like, okay, I'm gonna like this guy. I don't even know what kind of Doctor he's gonna play yet. I don't know anything. It's just as soon as I saw him, I'm like, I know he's going to do a good job with this. This is going to be good stuff.
Glad you're so trusting.
All right there, Pollyanna.
Well, I mean, come on. They don't cast the Doctor lightly. And this is something I was talking about last week, is that, they make sure that, it's somebody who can really play the role. They make sure that it's somebody who they can trust the role with. And so whether or not it's a character that I'm going to like or be able to, empathize with or whatever the case is, I know that it's going to be good. And I've seen this guy in some other stuff, and I know he's got the chops to pull it off. It's just a matter of how is he going to impress me at this point.
Okay. Yeah. I think I understand both of their standpoints.
Mm-hmm.
Where I fall on it personally, I would have been able to accept either approach, either the known or the unknown, because of the fact, and this goes back to exactly what you were saying, Jay, this is not something where they just pull a name out of a hat. They put some due diligence into coming up with the final five, and the last one is just a dartboard or something like that. There's rhyme and reason and method to all of Moffat's madness. Wow, method to Moffat's madness. My alliteration is strong tonight. That he knows where he's headed with this. And that the timing, which wasn't right before, is right now. So whether it's an audience member who knows what he's done before and is waiting to see what he brings to the table with a known actor and a known role and now seeing where that hybridization goes, or whether it's somebody who's never heard of that guy before Sunday and now wants to see, how this person, they've been hearing things. Oh, there's all this talk about this guy. And now see what that does to a role that they know and they hold so near and dear. I'm ready for the experience, come what may.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, that seems to be the general consensus. I know, was it Digital Spy did a poll on the selection of Peter Capaldi as the 12th Doctor recently, and 66.26% of people say that, you know, they're really glad that they cast him as the Doctor. Almost 12% said that, you know, they don't know what they were thinking, that they think it's crap, and 22% said, yeah, I'll wait and see. I have no opinion so far. So, I mean, the internet agreed with the choice, you know, and the majority of the internet, that's a big deal. Like, yeah. Name one other argument on the internet where the majority got behind somebody and said, yep, nope, this is good. We agree. No, really? No flame wars, nothing. We're good.
Yeah. And it's interesting, you know, with those statistics specifically, that the people who didn't, of the people of that third of the people who did not come right out and say, yeah, great call, of that third, twice as many within that group that abstained from showing their love, twice as many of them said, you know what, I'm not going to form an opinion, as opposed to that one chunk that said, no, grr, pitchforks and torches and, you know, run the old guy out on a rail. So that's rewarding to see that they've got that much trust either in the show, in the showrunner, in the talent, or just in the universe itself. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, well, I think it's a little early for us to start making any kind of predictions about what we think is going to end up impacting the course of the next series. Because obviously, you know, we've got the 50th anniversary and the Christmas episode to go through. So as far as who news in general, there's your news right there.
There is no other news.
I heard they got a new doctor.
Yes.
Yeah, this has kind of trumped everything. Like, nobody even bothered putting out any other news. It's just, okay, yep, here he is. Here's everything you could possibly want to know about it. Yeah, he was in a band with Colin Ferguson. Yeah, everything. Oh,
Do the research. Find out about the letter that he wrote.
Oh yeah,
when he was a kid. That's fantastic. You talk about somebody who's been a long time, you know, a lifetime fan of the show, which I think in and of itself is going to be a great thing because he's familiar with damn near all of the doctors to date. Mm-hmm. So he's got that huge body of work that he knows inherently well, and he was so passionate about the show from a childhood age that he wrote in with his thoughts. You know, just go find it, experience it for yourself because it's fantastic. It's gold.
Yeah,
but there's.
I haven't seen this yet. So.
Yeah, go. I'll make sure that I hand it to Jay before he does the link dump for the episode on the site because it's just a great thing, and it came out the next day when they were starting to do some of the initial interviews to discuss his taking on of the role. As we mentioned at the top of the show, though, there's one other little piece of news. One. If you're putting your spoiler helmet on. And pulling down your blast shield, now would be the time.
And it's not even confirmed as a spoiler. This is just our interpretation of something that has come out recently.
Yeah, but I think it's pretty telling.
Oh, yeah, very much so.
What it really means at the core of it is still yet to be determined, but in and of itself, it says quite a bit. And so it has to do with the ad that they just ran, or the little teaser.
The announcement of Peter Capaldi as the Doctor. It's a short little, like, almost commercial that they put out running through the Doctors, you know, starting with William Hartnell, going all the way through Peter Capaldi, you know, showing all 13 faces.
Right. Now, 13 faces. Wait a minute. Jay, 13 faces? What do you mean?
Well, they included John Hurt as well. Now, the interesting thing is where they included John Hurt, because he didn't fit in after the 11th and before the 12th Doctor. No, they shoved him in between the 8th Doctor and the 9th Doctor.
Okay.
So this really lends a lot of weight and really makes it look like this is our Time War Doctor. Whether it's a forgotten regeneration or it's an older version of the 8th Doctor, you know, that's still up for debate, but this really does look like that's where he fits into the timeline.
This, if they want to stick to canon, and if they want to stick to the descriptions, this now shoots the legs out from under the Valyard theory, insofar as being described as the byproduct in between the penultimate Doctor and the final regeneration of the Doctor, if you want to take that. It also still now calls into mind mathematics, counting Doctors. Yep. Is 9 really 9? Is 10 really 10? Is if you've got this intermittent, does that mean potentially, thank you, Badger, for pointing this out, that we could be looking at the final regeneration of the Doctor?
We've talked about this before.
Yep.
I think... So from what I heard, the Time Lords put the speed limit, as it were, of, you know, the limit of regenerations. But it's just a suggestion from the Time Lords. Now that there are no Time Lords, it's possible that the Doctor can actually manipulate and have more regenerations, because they gave more to the Master at one point. So, I mean, even if it's right that, you know, we haven't been counting Doctors and he actually is on his 13th regeneration, and it might not be the final one. That's where I am at right now.
Absolutely legit. And we don't have any sort of definitive answers right now. Everything is supposition as far as is it a rule or a guideline? Is it something that can be enforced while the rest of Gallifrey and the High Council is trapped within the time lock, and therefore they have absolutely no bearing over anything outside of it? Did he gain regenerations from River, you know, when she turned them all over to him? All kinds of theories. You know, it goes back to that whole idea of, is the clock really running on our fair Doctor? But the idea of putting Hurt in between the 8th and 9th, outside of whether or not you want to count regenerations, now also means that, you know, we've got this fascinating opportunity to fill that gap that we've been itching for, as far as at least the TV series goes, about the aftermath of the Time War, or the last great Time War. It's a good thing we're kind of talking about some of the books next week, because a lot of the ones that I had kind of chosen for the shortlist that I thought we might want to take a look at happened to revolve around the 8th. Just happened to work out that way. But it went to show that there was an entire book series of dozens and dozens and dozens of these books that had to do with the later years and adventures of the 8th Doctor, because it was such an unknown that the fan base was itching to know, you know, what it ended up doing to him psychologically, how he made his transition to 9th, you know, all of these things. This can give us some of that. Does it mean, if he's in between 8th and 9th, that Eccleston will actually make an appearance just for the sake of filling out the regeneration scene?
I hope so. I mean, that's one thing I've been hoping for this whole time. You know, we know that Moffat has said that he met with Chris Eccleston, and you know, they were discussing him coming back for the 50th anniversary. And I seriously hope that they're like, look, can we just film, like, you know, half a second of you throwing your head back or whatever, and, you know, just coming in from the regenerative, you know, just something like that. I'm hoping that they're holding that, you know, that's one of his secrets that he's keeping, just like Clara being in the, you know, Asylum of the Daleks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That'd be fantastic. It really would. Literally. Yep.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, I've been so excited over the last couple of days. This is, you know, I've never kind of lost a step with the show. I've never kind of doubted anything that was going on. I always knew that there was a grand plan going on with these things, come hell or high water. But man, with everything that's been coming around lately, it's such a great time right now to be a Whovian. It really is. So much cool stuff.
Yeah, I mean, this has just been like consuming most of my thoughts for the past few days. It's just every aspect. I'm like, I wonder what he's gonna, you know, what his costume's gonna be like. I wonder how he's gonna be with Clara. I wonder if they're gonna do that. You know, it's just all the possibilities coming out, and it's just a great time to sit back and just ponder.
Yeah.
So go ahead and do your pondering, but while you're doing your pondering, share your pondering with us. Melissa, can you please tell these people how they can share their ponderings with us?
They can reach us at GallifreyPublicRadio.com and can totally tweet us at Gallifrey Radio.
Yes, do the total tweeting.
Yes, please. And we've been getting a lot of good conversations going on Twitter and all the different areas. We've been getting some feedback, so thank you for that. You know, the feedback at GallifreyPublicRadio.com if you want to send an email. Mm-hmm. So yeah,
we're slowly gaining people on the Facebook. Slowly, that's like the slowest thing to pick up. It's like it used to be everyone's talking. Oh, you're not on Facebook, you don't exist. All right, so we put something on Facebook, and there's nobody there.
Yeah, but we have been getting a lot more people on Facebook. So, you know, welcome to all the newcomers. If it's just
50
on Facebook,
of you.
Yes,
all 50 of you rock hard.
We love you.
We do. We totally heart the hell out of you. Two hearts. iTunes comments, because remember, those iTunes comments are really beneficial to us, not only to give us something to talk about and a way to communicate with you, but actually your comments and your ratings on iTunes help more people discover us too. We are ranked among the top 40 or 30 or whatever it is of WHO-related podcasts if you do an iTunes search. So, and we're rising. So thank you.
That does mean something, because there are quite a few Doctor Who podcasts out there.
Yeah, just a few people like to talk about this show.
And actually, real quick, I just wanted to throw out there, one of the other podcasts is 2 Minute Time Lord. They did one recently talking about the nature of canon. You know, what we always get into the argument of, you know, what's canonical and what's not canon and this, that, and the other. And recently they did a really, really good episode on that. So if you guys want to go over, look at 2 Minute Time Lord, find that episode about canon, and it's a really good discussion.
Cool. So, yeah, I'm not familiar with that one. I'll have to check that one out.
And, you know, like it says, it's usually like a 2 minute episode, but this one was a supersized 30 minute episode. So,
yeah. in the inaccurately titled podcast.
No, it was the time dilation episode. Get it right.
Oh, they reversed the polarity on the timestamp.
Yes. Yes. All right. Well, I think we've beaten this horse about as much as we can. So. Mm.
You guys for people wanted to know, I fielded a couple of questions. People wanted to know what it was we were going to be discussing next week as far as the novels go. Because we thought we were going to be discussing the novels a week and a half ago.
Yeah.
But some stuff came up.
We're getting there.
We wanted to talk about some other things for a little while. So we figured this news was a little bit more important at the time, and I hope you'll bear with us on that fact. But people wanted to know some of the specific novels that we were going to be going through in case they were able to grab a copy of them electronically for their Kindles or what have you, or whether some of our hardcore who-theists. Oh my God! I just made up a new term. Yes, write it down. Mark the date. In who-theists. might actually have some of these novels or paperbacks kicking around already. So the ones specifically that we've been taking a look at that we'll be going into next week if we have a chance to plow through them all, and I take a refresher course on all these, City of the Dead, which was part of the New Who Adventures, The Also People, interesting take, a little dark, have fun with that one, a couple of Eighth Doctor stories that run in very separate timelines. Camera Obscura, that takes place in a London of yesteryear, and then Fear Itself, which takes place on a Martian base. So take that one into the future. Human Nature and Just War, which I think is probably going to be my most intriguing one of the bunch, simply because it has to do with some of those great moral decisions about humanity versus the necessary evils of warfare and so forth. So all good stuff to chew on. I'll try and make sure that we get those referenced somewhere, either on the site or I'll tweet them out so people can have the titles to chew on for next week.
All right. Well, this has been episode 48 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying, I finally have a face to put on the 12 spot on my Time Lord clock.
Nice. And this is Melissa saying, yes, another Scottish doctor.
Does that mean that he has a tartan wrapped around his screwdriver or something?
Here's hoping.
And this is Kira saying, patience, my dear Whovian companions. Everything has its own time, so just sit back and enjoy the spectacle.
We'll see you guys next week.
Halsey.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week for new episodes. Have something you need to say, something we got wrong, or something you just need to weigh in on? Send us an email at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com. You can also find us on Twitter @GallifreyRadio, on Stitcher Smart Radio under Gallifrey Public Radio. Find us on iTunes, where you can leave us comments and reviews. You can also head over to our homepage at GallifreyPublicRadio.com, where you can leave comments on each episode and get into discussions on the things that we bring up. You can also keep up to date on all the latest news and what's going on in the community. Music by Beyond the Epilogue and Retcon Addict.
Gallifrey Public Radio is copyright 2013.